This KFKA podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
Hey, this is Sean Keeler of the Denver Post. You're listening to the whole show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Some call him genius, legend, ladies' man. The best to ever observe the game. We want to keep him humble, so we call him Sean. This is Keeling Me Softly with Denver Post columnist Sean Keeler.
It's the only segment in radio that has a name like that. And so obviously it has to be because we have very unique guest, Sean Keeler of the Denver Post. Sean, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good. You know, I've seen wondrous things since I've lived in the Front Range. It's God's gift to humanity, Colorado. But let me tell you what, I've seen a bear. Well, I missed the bear because of you, but now also because of you, I'm pulling away from Cubs Sox Game 3, White Sox fan talking. And even more remarkable than all the moose and nature and elk in Estes Park is I watched Jose Urquidy strike out three Cubs at Wrigley Field, throwing one pitch faster than 90 miles an hour, MVP. I just watched that happen. No one in Colorado but me is watching this game right now, and I'm just telling you, I watched it happen, and it was amazing.
What's the score right now, Sean?
Nothing.
Oh, okay.
And the Cubs will win by one run, because they do, but that's fine.
Yeah, wasn't that the case last night?
It was two runs.
We're pulling you away from this game, man. I feel like
you're
pulling
me away from Sox Cubs. That's how much I love you.
And that's what we appreciate. And that's why we love this segment. I want to talk about fights with you, Sean. I am not in the good graces with Buffs fans today.
What do you do now?
Well, I tweeted out, I think the Buffs are screwed. I don't know. I just think they're screwed, Sean.
Define screwed to me.
Okay, well.
Okay, FCC. No, FCC, I were saying this. Define screwed to me.
Well, okay. Let me. I saw a Troy Ranks post. He said a deputy made an attempt to serve CU Buffs coach Deion Sanders last week in relation to Sunshine's bankruptcy, all that stuff, subpoenaed, all that. That kind of stuff is what I look at, and I just think it's added up over. And you're involved in this too, Sean. I mean, I've talked about your story, your situation. All these things have just added up where I'm like, I don't know how serious this guy is. It's finally hit a point to me. I just think it's going to be a rough season. And if it is, as you've told us, we're not going anywhere. Like, the Buffs probably can't move on from him. So I feel like they're screwed at this point.
Yeah, well, no, and that's fine. No, let me counter that. Well, you're not wrong in that, they got some. When you hire Deion, you bring the circus. Sorry, I've said it, and good or bad, again, as I've also said, there's good and there is less good. There are all things. Everything about Deion is true, whatever side of the fence you want to be on with him. So, one. Two, it's a distraction, and a case on the 31st and a potential appearance on a game week, which I'm not sure is going to happen, that's in what is kind of a must-win game, or at least a must-show-up kind of game. Yeah, it's not ideal. Counter-argument, now hear me out, they now have coordinators who are, at least on the offensive side, so much better than last year that, unlike a year ago at this time, keep in mind, I know we wanted to get the Broncos here, but with the Buffs, a lot of the blame from the Deion VRs and the North Korea wall that they formed, and the smack wall of friendship, Romy, the rest, is a lot of this happened, because Shermer sucks. Yeah, that we all knew that. And because of the cancer, and because he basically took a spring and summer where he wasn't coaching football in June, July, some of May. Understandable. It's a human issue, it's a human problem. He's beating the cancer, great. But clearly, a lot of weight was not being held. A lot of the rope was not being picked up by his staff, including our man Robert. Now with the Bengals a year ago, uh, I I would contend that they've upgraded to some degree in that department, and I could be proven wrong. And this is where the Brendan Marion effect may be felt, and that, let's be real, a lot of this Deion is designating to somebody, right? Let's just be real about this. And I would contend that at least this year, it looks like they're being designated to a lot better people than they were at this time a year ago. So there's my counter.
And look at you.
Screwed.
Yes.
No, I'm not saying that it couldn't go badly, and I'm not saying this wouldn't be a 4-day football team. It might. I mean, they're all scenarios of CUR short of nothing higher than maybe 8 wins. Anything from 8 wins on down is absolutely on the table. Like, you have to just put everything there. It's not ideal, but I would contend they have better backup in terms of lieutenants and captains in that leadership room than a year ago with some of the staff that they let go. And I know for a fact they were told that some of the lieutenants were not acceptable for this very reason, because a year ago they were playing catch-up. And by God, did it start showing. And they're not doing that as much this year. So I don't know how big, respect to Troy, respect to other people who point that out, it is kind of a show, literally, as we've talked about. But I guess maybe that's me being on the Brendan Marion bandwagon and say, God, that was a good hire.
Yeah.
And maybe this takes care of this. Does that make sense?
He is the reason I am very interested to see what they do offensively.
Oh, yeah. If they lose 30-10, they won't. The whole point of Brendan Marion is they got to score 30 points a game, right? You've seen the stat. It's like 12-3 or 13-3 when they do. 3-18 when they don't. I think that's right. I mean, that's stark, like really simple. Like, they got to be blow up, explosive, be that kind of team. And if he is that, they'll be interesting. And if he's not, they're going to go 3-9, and then they are screwed, because now you've got a $10 million football
right.
coach who's, to your point, 6-18 as a worst case scenario. And then you got a real problem, because that I don't see that happening, because if it did, the noise would be far beyond my megaphone, and I think the embarrassment would be such that it could get really, really ugly. But we will see.
Yeah, and we will. And I'll be happy to be the first guy, you know, and say, sure. Hey, yeah, I was wrong. They weren't screwed. They turned it around, and the hiring of Brendan Marion was huge for this team. And there's a part of me that kind of believes that, but the negative part of my brain is telling me, Sean, that this team is going to go south, and then when you do, it's going to be, well, we have no choice. We have no choice but to keep going with this. In most coaches' situations, Sean, if you say, okay, first year, you win 4 games. It was better before the Carl Durrell era, but still 4 wins. Second year, really good. You win 9.
Yep.
Last year,
yep.
Obviously atrocious. If you go year 4 bad again, that's most coaches' jobs, right?
It would be. Most.
Depending on your expectations and such, I suppose.
Expectations, your money, your contract, your war chest, and the celebrity / political value of the guy in the seat. I'd say if you, again, let's put the worst case. If you were, say, 4-8, 3-9, that guy would probably be gone. Let's be simple. If it was Carl Durrell.
Oh, yeah, he'd be gone.
The guy personally, absolutely gone. But Carl Durrell is not Deion Sanders. And the whole point of hiring Deion Sanders was that he was not Carl Durrell. And that is simply from a fame, politics, all the Coach Prime effect stuff. So they have to ask a hard question. Somebody, I just kind of have to laugh that Rick George punted on this. I'm really, really curious, as history looks in 20 to 35, 50 years, if we all make it that long. I won't make it that long, but the rest of us like you do. How CU history looks at Rick George. With this hire specifically, and then the fact that he's there, but somebody else is going to have to make a harder decision that there's no way that he could have. Because we talked about this on and off air some last year, right? Like, when he announced he was retiring, we went, oh boy, there goes Deion. It was kind of like when Shalomi, his daughter, left school. We all went, oh boy, there he goes. And trying to find the indicators, it's not great. And if it goes bad, that's not going to look great on Rick's legacy, because this has been very expensive. And Rick George has basically turned over his athletic department before he left to Smack and to an agency in Long Beach and to Michael Strahan and to Constance and to all those folks over there. He turned his university and his football over to them because he just went, I've tried. It was a expletive it higher, as it was described to me, and I understand it. And we can argue the pros and cons of making that choice for the reason they made it. So, yeah, legacy-wise, I'll be real curious where that goes because they can't afford, to your point, they can't afford it. Like, they can't afford for him to be bad, and they can't afford to pay him anymore to be good, to stick around. Like, he got probably the best contract he's ever going to have here. But I can't – my boss and I were having this talk yesterday about this, and my old boss and I talked about this a lot, as you would imagine. And that is, I'll pose this question to you. Again, with all the scenarios being on the table, including maybe bad ones, this could be a very – Big 12 is pretty fluid other than the NIL-2 at the top, depending on what you think of Utah. It feels like it's kind of BYU and Texas Tech and everybody else. Is Deion Sanders more likely – to walk away because he's never going to be fired? Like, that's not going to happen. It would take some insane stuff and maybe some criminal stuff for that to happen, I would think. Is he more likely to walk away, whether it's this year or next, with a 4-8 or an 8-4?
Yeah. What do you? Yeah, I could definitely see that. I thought this when,
like,
he was first hired.
Job done. 8-4 and say job done. Yeah. Right? Like, that's his MO. We make it very complicated when, just like, it's about 30, scoring 30 points from these guys. So Deion, it's how is my brand? How is my image? Not school. Not I'm here to help young kids. I'm here, whatever. There's some of that. The altruism of Deion Sanders depends on the eye and the ear of the beholder and how much of the Kool-Aid you want to drink. But give him the benefit of the doubt. Regardless, the bottom line is his brand, and this job and the PR coming out of it is his brand. And I would think that if they're 4-8 again, he is going to dare them to fire him.
Heels
in and say, I am not going until this is done, or you fire me, and then you get to put that on your record. He goes back and goes, you get to be the guy who fired Deion Sanders.
Yeah, and this is...
You want to go on to Twitter as the guy where this is, as the guy who fired Deion Sanders?
Right.
I would wish Fernando Lobo all the love in the world because I have walked those shoes and it ain't great.
Well, and this is why, Sean, this is why that term came to me. You know, it's like, I just feel like, yes, there's a season in front of us. We have a lot of games to go to see what this is going to look like. Yeah. And if we're doing picks and all this stuff like predictions, I kind of feel like ceiling is maybe 6 wins, which 6 wins would be fine. I would back off of my they're screwed thing and say, bowl team, that's great. But... Yeah. I just have a feeling that's the ceiling, and that's if everything goes right in this complicated Big 12. And if it goes south, then yeah, even if you could fire him, do you want to fire him? And does he leave? If he leaves, then you got to start over, and it's not going to have the pop. Then we see the story about the ratings today and all that going up and down.
I've written about the ratings. We've not Boulder, not current or former Boulder writers, but. Yeah, that's been going south for a while, and it's been going south at a rate lower than they'd say. Well, the ratings for TV on all college sports is going down. Yes, absolutely true, but they're falling at a faster clip, and that's, I can tell you that interest among our readership has fallen at a much greater clip than I would have expected. I wrote it, and it's true. The honeymoon is over from a PR standpoint here. And I think nationally people are kind of looking at this, and it goes back to how important this season is. I think people are looking at it like, show me. Like, this is all a great, it's a great, you know, kind of, it's spectacle. It's all civil. And show me the stake, dude. Like, show me where this is. Now, I think he senses that. I think the hirings and some of his actions have been very reflective of, I did not have a great job review. Even though I got overpaid for various things and have been getting various not contracted funds from the university and from various sources to keep me happy and to keep this thing rolling. But at some point, I think you're right. You would be screwed, back to your term, if you had to try to explain anything that isn't better than maybe 5-7. I think even 4-8 would be a one win better, and they could say, well, it's progress and Juju's young and we're coming back and we didn't know what we had in the offensive line and yada, yada, yada down the line. But what you're going to see is the TV ratings continue to go down. And what you're going to see is some of those kids who are the admissions from out of state are going to fall. And more importantly, you're going to see your season ticket base continue to dip, which it has been. And they say, well, yeah, it dipped 3,000 because they added 3,000. Yes, you're back to a net zero from 2 years ago, but you're going to just, you're not going to reverse that slide. No one is going to pay for a $10 million coach to watch a $10 million coach with a program that goes 4-8. They're just not. And not when the Broncos are where they are and where the winter sports teams still are where they are in this market. Then you're down to kind of Deion cultists and the hard, loyalist of Buffs who've sat through everything, God bless them, and will put up with a lot. So I think it just becomes a business thing at this point. But to your point about business, I don't think they have $30 million. You know, they just got $35 million. What if they get $30 million in donations? They don't have that. The Ulines just gave Northwestern, the big MAGA donors in Wisconsin, just gave Northwestern like $35 million. Wrote him a check last week or a few days ago. There's nobody doing that at CU with that bulk kind of contribution right now, and they would need that kind of bulk contribution to make the Deion era end, and I don't think anybody wants that on any level.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree. Sean Keeler joining us, Denver Post. Sean, while we have you, a few more minutes. Scuffle yesterday, good thing, bad thing. What? Tell us about it.
Oh, I think I was talking to the producer when he came on. I don't have a problem with the scuffle. I don't have a problem with Bo. You know, it's funny, we're not talking about Bo's ankle. We're talking about Nick Benito's ankle. How's that for I should have written that in the piece today. I don't have a problem with the fight. It's inevitable at camp. It's inevitable when you also this deep into camp, and then when you don't have a joint practice. I don't think Malcolm Roach hitting Knicks twice is ideal. I don't think anybody hitting Knicks is ideal. I think that has to be controlled and put in check, and then everything else will kind of fall in line. I don't love protected QBs as a former fat nose tackle, as you know. I'm not pretty like you, so I don't love pretty boys getting protected, but this pretty boy is pretty much season in a position where you've got really good depth everywhere else. Or to put it another way, Malcolm Roach is replaceable. Bo Nix is not.
100%. Yes.
And I love Malcolm Roach.
Yeah.
That's the thing you got to keep in mind.
And that's where, like, if this happens again, you know, and you get Malcolm Roach.
You have to find somebody.
Right. Benito and McGlinchey are going at it again. Then I'm starting to go, okay, we got some problems here. Like, if you see bad teams and it's like, hey, we've reported on three different fights going on. Yeah, you think there may be a culture issue there. In this case, I do worry about, the fact that Bo's ankle is a very touchy subject there. Let's be careful. But on any other, if it wasn't for that, then I would think this is probably more of almost a good thing if it's isolated.
And what got reported less is I think Bo went up to Singleton or one of the defensive captains, I believe, yesterday after they were done, or after one, or at least close to when they were done, or right after they were done, and kind of pled his case and kind of tried to cool the water some. And boys are going to be boys, man. You cannot rage at that level of physicality and testosterone and not have somebody want to just beat the living snot out of somebody else, especially if you've been doing it for 3 weeks straight. But I think when you have cooler heads and you get in that locker room and you can talk it out and be a brotherhood, you know, families are going to fight. Brothers are going to go at it. It's what you do when somebody from another jersey comes out after you and how you're going to line up. And so far, we'll find out Friday, but one Friday in, look pretty good.
Yeah.
They can fight all they like.
Yeah.
If they're going to take all that anger out on somebody else on the other side, even if it's in the preseason. And we don't know how good the Falcons really are, but let's just enjoy it while it lasts.
I love it. Sean Keeler, appreciate your time as always, my friend. Great write-up today in the Denver Post, talking a little bit about that fight. You caught up with Sonny Dykes. Man, phenomenal story. I really enjoyed this one.
Thank you. Sonny's a good dude, so it was always great to catch up with him. And they do not play CU this year. So when I got done talking to him, I said, well, I'll tell you what, you're not on the schedule, so we'll see you in the championship game with Deion. And he just laughed. He goes, that sounds like a plan. And I thought, I don't think it's in the plan here, but we'll see.
We'll see. No, great work by you, Sean. Appreciate it as always, my friend.
All right, thanks, buddy. See ya. Bye.
Sean Keeler, Denver Post. He caught up with TCU coach Sonny Dykes because he mentored Broncos offensive coordinator Davis Webb a decade ago. So he connected with him about the Davis Webb stuff, about the fights, all of it. So fascinating read in the Denver Post this morning. 39 minutes after the hour. Let's take a short break and get the latest on the local sports flash.
This KFKA podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.